matter, Morty?
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
No, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to the Every Outfit Podcast.
How is the birthday girl doing today?
I'm doing great. I mean, you know, I'm going by Miranda rules. You get a day. It's not exactly my birthday week. I had a lovely birthday on Tuesday.
We went to High Tea at the Peninsula, which is also where the preview of the And Just Like That auction took place. And I sat down on this beautiful velvet sofa and there was a woman playing a harp. And then Lauren's like, you know, this is the Harvey Weinstein Hotel, right?
Well, I have you to thank for the lovely High Tea. You helped Paul plan my birthday, which I was not expecting. All I asked for was a bouquet. I thought maybe he and I would have dinner later in the week. I could not imagine that he would surprise me with all of my friends for High Tea. And yes, I did do a traumatizing dump of information on him because he did surprise me. So as he turned into the Peninsula entrance, I said, oh, there was a vermin infestation on the roof. I hope we're not going there. And then this is the hotel where Harvey Weinstein raped women. And then the valet opened our door.
Okay, well, to be fair, the infestation on the roof was because they have a rooftop garden and it was more bugs than rodents.
You know this because I sent this in our group chat and I was like, lol, we're going here for the end, just like that preview tomorrow. And I didn't realize that you and Tat were like, fuck, this is where we're going for her birthday too.
Yeah, Tat called the hotel and was like, bitch, there better be a second kitchen.
And there is, and in their defense, it's because they have a rooftop garden.
The Peninsula remains open. It's not even a big deal, but it was reported on by the California Post, the sinister West Coast offshoot of the New York Post.
And Harvey Weinstein is banned from that hotel. So everything's fine again. But this birthday was an embarrassment of riches. Beyond having your company, you guys gave me an amazing gift.
I actually do think it was amazing.
Guys, Chelsea and Tatiana, a few weekends from now, will be whisking me away to the desert to see the one, the only, Trisha Paytas play at a casino, not in Palm Springs, but in Indio that I've truly never heard of before.
Only the best. Hey, at least we're not staying at that casino.
I looked at Trisha Paytas's tour dates because I thought her tour had ended. She is playing Indio, California, May 9th. She will be in London, May 24th, and then in Vegas, June 12th.
Okay, well, here's how we got to seeing Trisha Paytas in Indio. Because we were going to surprise you with Lily Allen tickets. Then you rudely booked an out-of-town trip. So we were like, Trisha Paytas is performing in Los Angeles. It's sold out. Do you know how much these tickets are going for?
The Los Angeles dates.
$700 is the cheapest ticket. So for three of us. Can you imagine spending that much money to see Trisha Paytas? Then we realized it was just way cheaper to get hotel rooms, drive, get tickets in Indio, which is how we ended up with this scenario.
In my defense, I'm going out of town this weekend to see my in-laws. And thank you.
So you don't want to go on another trip the very next weekend? Sorry, bitch. It isn't up to you.
I think there's a weekend in between. Anyway, I love Trisha Paytas. I have indoctrinated you to also love Trisha Paytas, but I'm glad you didn't spend that kind of coin to see her in Los Angeles.
Trisha Paytas is someone that normally would never be on my radar, but you and Tat wouldn't shut the fuck up about her. And then once I got to like actually see her content, I was like, oh, this woman is a genius. Like she's like divine or something.
Yes. Is it performance art? Is she an accidental genius? We don't know.
Who cares? I'm excited to see her on Euphoria this season also.
Which we'll be talking about this season of Euphoria later in the episode. I do want to shout out the florist who made the wonderful bouquet that my husband gave me because that's all I asked for. And I had assumed that he was going to go to the wonderful wholesaler on Santa Monica Boulevard that we love going to.
Shout out to Wholesale Flowers.
But this beautiful bouquet showed up on my birthday. My breath was taken away. It matched the look of our wedding flowers. And then Paul goes, I had to call many florists. They were all mean to me. And I said, excuse me, the florists were mean to you? What happened? He did not pick a photo from the website. He wanted to create his own bouquet, which literally three separate florists were like, no. And when he described...
I could have told him that you can't just do that shit.
I could have told him that, but he was surprising me.
In fact, I did send him the correct florist.
Well, he is also a straight man. And so the person you gave him could not turn around a custom bouquet in 24 hours because, of course, he also left it to the last minute.
Right.
But anyway, shout out to Jane at Sophie LaFleur, who ended up making this beautiful custom bouquet. If you are a man who lives in Los Angeles, who has discerning taste and doesn't want to be shunned by other florists, go to Sophie LaFleur. And lastly, before we get into this And Just Like That preview, which was really the highlight of my birthday, shout out to our editor, Oscar, who gifted me, but really us, a crucial addition to our Sex and the City memorabilia, which was this sheet of slides that were press photos from Sex and the City.
Yes, photos that were taken by Craig Blankenhorn, who is basically like the Annie Leibovitz of like on-set photographers. He also did The Sopranos. He did Succession. He's doing Only Murders in the Building now. He's a genius. And it's so fun that we have these now. I want to actually project them at some point.
Well, the 10-year anniversary of the Instagram account is fast approaching. So we should do something to celebrate it. And maybe we can be like our elementary school English teachers and have a slideshow.
Perfect. So physically holding a copy of Carrie Bradshaw's Loved and Lost in the Harvey Weinstein Hotel was an experience.
Here's the thing. I don't know about you, Chell, but like I keep discovering new items that are available at this auction.
I know. It truly never stops.
So I think that the item that I was most impressed by were Stanford's letters to Carrie. Not that I want them, but I was impressed at the detail and the storytelling in them.
Totally. That was amazing to see in person. Also, we got to see all of Carrie's like paraphernalia from The Woman, like her drafts of that novel, other old-timey things.
Little gloves, little shoes.
Yeah. I also love that they had her collection of shoe boxes and shopping bags.
They did. The other thing that impressed me that was near the Stanford letters that I went back because I was like, what lot is this in? Because it's about Carrie, but it was near the Stanford stuff. There were these USPS boxes, but they had FedEx labels on them to Carrie's old apartment.
That's a detail that only Tat would notice.
Yeah, credit to Tatiana that was like, why are there FedEx labels on these USPS boxes?
Only a stylist.
But that was part of lot 211, which is Carrie's shoeboxes. Not to be confused with, I think, the shoeboxes we saw. These are shoeboxes that have the little Polaroids of Carrie's shoes, which did we even check? Are the shoes in those boxes or it's just
the
boxes?
No, it's just the boxes.
Have you looked at the range of prices for the Loved and Lost copies?
What is it at now?
Okay. I checked yesterday, so I haven't checked this morning. And by the way, we're still 6 days out from this auction going live. So there are five separate copies of it. The top ranging one is $900. The cheapest one is $350.
I don't even know how you pick which one to bid on.
The cheapest one.
Although, does the cheapest one end up getting higher? I never buy things at auction, so I don't know like what the strategy would be for that. Also, we should clarify, it's literally just the dust jacket on another book.
Yeah, that is the thing. The spell was broken for us seeing this copy in person. As thrilling as it was, once you open it up, you're like, oh, it's just another book.
Yeah.
So we will be spending, if we win one of the five book lots, hundreds of dollars for a book that was probably purchased at a thrift store.
I don't know. I think we might need to get something more obscure from the And Just Like That auction, but we'll see. Seeing the Love Samantha card, though, was amazing.
There was sadly no Mr. Big funeral paraphernalia other than the Love Samantha card at this preview.
Yeah.
Also, It has been brought to our attention by the fuckettes that the Rolex that I shouted out when we were initially talking about the End Just Like That auction, the one from Sex and the City 2 that Carrie gives to Big, is fake. And that bid is up to $2,500. So for those who are currently bidding on this Rolex, I hope it is for your love of John James Preston and not because you think you'll be getting a real Rolex for a steal.
Right. On the way out of the And Just Like That auction, we also ran into two of our favorite fashion vloggers, Jasmina and David. I was so starstruck. I love to meet a fellow Sex and the City content creator.
I was shocked that they listened to our podcast and knew who we were.
I know. Shout out to them. They're amazing. We should collab, as the kids say.
Wow, we couldn't sound more like Valerie Cherish than in this moment.
This must be what Valerie Cherish's podcast is like.
We're open to collabs.
Honestly, someone take us out back and shoot us.
But not before we can bid on one of the five copies of Loved and Lost.
And then bury us with that copy.
Or is it about the manuscript, which we also got to lay our eyes on, which is just repeated phrases.
Yeah. But I love that there was like a random Lorem Ipsum in there, but then it started being English again.
Look, that art and production team did the Lord's work. In all seriousness, if you are going to bid on this auction, truly SEMA and LTW's wardrobe, which we got to see a lot of, and there is a lot of it for sale, like there's a lot of value there.
Yeah, totally. And they're not necessarily the most iconic pieces that were worn by these characters, but they're pieces that are extremely valuable on their own.
So if we were smart, I would bid on that clothing that we could actually wear. But instead, I will probably drop an entire paycheck to get an X, Y, and Me coffee mug.
We shall see.
Today's episode is brought to you by Square, the business toolkit that helps you sell, manage, and grow without the chaos. And I brought Chelsea into this ad read because we've been using Square for years.
We've actually been using Square longer than we've had this podcast. Every time we've done a live show, sold merch, we've used Square.
That's right. And we truly would have been lost without it on our last tour. Square lets you start selling in person or online from your counter, your phone, your website, or even through delivery platforms. You can take payments whether it's tap, chip, swipe, Apple Pay, invoices, all through one system. You can even manage your inventory. No switching tabs, no separate logins, just one place for your business to live.
Wait, that's how Paul kept track of the merch? I thought he was just doing that in his head.
Nope, all thanks to Square. Are you not a podcaster with your own merch business? No problem. Square has flexible tools that fit your setup, not the other way around. Have a salon? Square lets you take bookings, manage tips, track repeat clients, or are you a restaurant owner? Sync menus, manage delivery, and take orders at the table.
Square helps you run your business with confidence, clarity, and less chaos, and now it's easier than ever to get started. And why wait? Right now you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/outfit. That's SQUARE.com/go/outfit. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. So we have a lot of pop star news this week.
Which we rarely do.
Yeah, they all came back at once. It's kind of crazy. And I guess we should start with Coachella because we missed all of that. I told you to watch Justin Bieber, but did you actually watch his full set?
Did I stay up till nearly midnight to watch Justin Bieber? No. Did I find, when I was up at 6 in the morning on Sunday, the entire feed on Twitter and watch that? Yes.
Great. Whatever works. Was that weekend 2?
It was weekend 2. I saw the highlights from weekend 1. And I have to say, I have always wondered what is the point of Coachella being 2 weekends beyond just making more money. But I feel like the Justin Bieber performance and like really the maturation between weekend 1 and 2, where you see him, I mean, bumbling through weekend 1 is not the right way to categorize it. But you
know,
the second weekend, you saw him fall in love with performing.
Totally. Like the first weekend was more cathartic and more emotional for him. He hasn't performed like this in such a long time. He was obviously very nervous about the performance. And then on the second weekend, I feel like he was just encouraged by the positive response from the first weekend. So he just like was able to have fun again.
Yeah, I'm not a believer. If you can believe that, Chelsea. But this is someone who has been in all of our lives for so long. Like, you can't help but have a parasocial relationship with Justin Bieber, even if you don't listen to the music. So even I'm aware that he's been through it the last couple of years.
For sure. I was too old to get into Justin Bieber's first album, but obviously when Baby broke through, I was into that. And I'm into him in like a singles capacity. I'm not listening to full albums. I'm not listening to deep cuts, but I appreciate him as a performer.
Well, you are married to a Belieber.
I'm married to a Belieber who's Justin Bieber's age. So my wife grew up like watching those backlit YouTube videos that he showed like week one and stuff. So yeah, it was a very, very important performance for her.
Well, I saw people make the point that the reason that he was singing his old YouTube videos was that Scooter Braun owns the rights to these songs, which I'm like, this is such a brain dead take. Like, again, I'm not the biggest Justin Bieber fan, but I can even tell what he's doing. Like, this is a meta commentary of like someone who is of the internet, who was almost devoured by what internet culture can do to someone and the fame that comes with it.
Totally. Well, his set was mostly songs from Swag and Swag 2, especially in the beginning of the show. And then he has the YouTube bit in the middle, which I thought was incredibly moving to see him harmonize with his younger self, his younger voice. It brought me to tears.
Right. And then it was the second weekend where he actually went into the crowd and let the fans touch him, which I understand contextually that this is a big deal.
For sure. Well, there was something really insane about the set design because it kind of did isolate him from the crowd in this like
donut
adjacent. You know what it looked like? Remember when Troye Sivan's fragrance line released that bowl that like wasn't a bowl, it had no bottom? It looked like that. It looked like this like Troye Sivan trinket tray, essentially.
A gigantic Troye Sivan trinket tray, correct.
Yeah, and this set kind of like insulated him from the crowd, but it also made him look kind of vulnerable in a way because it was just him, you know? There's not backup dancers, there's not pyrotechnics, and until the very end, at least, there were fireworks, but he presented himself in a way that was really stripped down and vulnerable. And at the end of the day, his voice is so beautiful that he can get away with it.
Yes. And I think the second weekend of Coachella proved is maybe stronger than the first weekend because I don't know if the top acts all talked to each other, but the second weekend seemed to be when guests were brought out.
There were guests first weekend, but they were different guests.
For Bieber too?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
There were different songs, different guests. Seeing Billie Eilish the second weekend was amazing. She didn't perform, but she came on stage and he serenaded her, which was very cute.
Well, yeah. I mean, before you know that it's Billie Eilish, you're like, is there literally a fan that's being pushed on stage towards Justin Bieber? And then you're like, oh, it's world famous pop star herself, Billie Eilish. And maybe the number one celebrity Belieber?
Yes.
Because if you didn't watch the performance but just read the reports, a lot of the stories were like, oh, he duetted with Billie Eilish. And it's like, no, that man serenaded his number one fan.
Well, it was cute because I don't know if I've ever seen a celebrity look that happy. And it was fun to see a celebrity that is a huge pop star sort of revert into being a little girl temporarily.
Right.
And her Justin Bieber fandom is legendary. There have been clips going around the internet of her when she was like, I don't know, like 12 or 13, saying stuff like, oh my God, like I was crying all night last night because I was thinking about what happens when I get a boyfriend. There's no way I'm ever going to love him as much as Justin Bieber. Like, so cute. I am sad that he didn't bring out Chance the Rapper, which I kind of thought would happen weekend two, because then we could have gotten I'm the One and Holy. And Holy is one of those songs where at first I'm like, this is way too religious for me, like kind of like a Jesus Walks or a Whitney Houston singing Jesus Loves Me. But then by the end of that song, I'm like ready to be baptized. It makes me religious for like 3 minutes.
And that's the power of music. Did you see that article that in New York, Like, the hottest social club is now Catholic Mass.
Wait, what do you mean? Which one?
Everybody's going to church again.
But I'm sure there's, like, a hip church.
A West Village church, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it has to be, like, a specific church that all the celebs are going to. Does New York have a, what is it, a Hillsong?
A Hillsong, a Mosaic? Is there a Mosaic out in New York?
I do not know. Shall we get into Sabrina Carpenter, one of the other headliners?
Of course. Sabrina Carpenter, who I watched the live stream. Can we just talk about the fact that Coachella is so, so expensive? I sent you... So tickets for 2027 Coachella are going to go on sale May 1st. Not to sound 100 years old, but I feel like when we were younger, it was like maybe the fall or a few months before. I didn't know it's now like a year before the festival happens.
You have to plan because otherwise it's so expensive to try and go at the last minute.
Well, I sent you a screenshot that the safari packages are already sold out, and those are like $15,000 for the weekend?
For weekend one.
For weekend one. I think it's $12,000. It's a little cheaper to go weekend two.
Well, I didn't realize, but like all of the influencer shit, that only happens weekend one. Right. They don't do any of that shit weekend two.
They can't afford it, Chelsea.
Well, I feel like weekend two is the time to go if you actually care to see any of these musicians.
Well, yeah, that's its reputation. But
you can't go to any of the fun parties, so that sucks.
I don't know. It all sounds like a nightmare. This is all to say that it is so expensive to go to Coachella, and yet I can sit on my couch and watch the live stream for free. It's like, Coachella, I would pay you $5 to $10 to watch this, but you're giving it to me for free.
Yeah, it's crazy that they don't charge for it.
So I watched Sabrina Carpenter the first weekend, which the rumor was that Madonna was going to come out on stage, and she didn't. And then I was like, all right, well, I already saw Sabrina Carpenter perform. And then, joke's on me, Madonna comes out weekend two.
Well, I think for a headliner, there's more of an advantage to having a big guest like that weekend, too.
I guess so. I feel like every year Coachella mutates and kind of it evolves and becomes something slightly different. It's getting more and more extreme, quite like the Met Gala. Because I asked you about Sabrina Carpenter's set because I knew that she had been touring. And I was like, oh, is that her set from her tour? Not realizing that it had ended last year. Because if you remember, Lady Gaga basically debuted her stage show at Coachella.
Right. I think Sabrina Wood was just for Coachella.
I know.
Which is crazy because it was so lavish and old school and the sets were so detailed and crazy and it was just such a big production. It was the opposite of Justin Bieber, truly.
A little while ago, I was talking to a fellow new mom who was dealing with hair thinning and shedding postpartum. And I told her I've been using Nutrafol's postpartum formula since I gave birth to baby Morty and how much it has helped me. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, and it's the number one hair growth supplement brand personally used by dermatologists. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF certified for sport, and clinically tested. And the best thing about Nutrafol is they know a one-size-fits-all approach does not work. That's why Nutrafol offers multiple formulas for men and women, tailored to different life stages like postpartum or menopause and lifestyle factors such as plant-based diets so you get support that's actually right for you. Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed, with automated deliveries and free shipping to keep you on track. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20% off and get added perks to support your hair health journey. Let your hair be one less thing to worry about. See visibly thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair in 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code OUTFIT. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT.
I loved the part of Sabrina's set where the dancers were dressed like poodles. And I loved the part where she was like crawling around on the fake Hollywood sign. I thought that was cute.
There were a lot of ideas going on in Sabrina Carpenter's performance. There was a lot of Fosse.
Really a lot of Fosse, like all eras of Fosse. There was some Michael Jackson. There was some Singing in the Rain.
As we understood by weekend two, there was a distinct Thelma and Louise nod. She had Susan Sarandon appear the first weekend, which not a lot of people understood who that, quote, old lady was. And then she brought out Gina Davis, or Gina Davis was in the car the second weekend.
They both did the same monologue, yes, both weekends, where they were both basically playing Sabrina down the road, an older version of Sabrina Carpenter looking back on the whole thing. The monologue was much too long, I thought.
Didn't land.
I don't think they needed to do all that, but of course it was so cute seeing both of them. And also Susan Sarandon, a more intuitive reference just because Sabrina did that video for Tears that was so inspired by Rocky Horror, and she was the Susan Sarandon character in that video. So I see how we got there.
Right. But Gina Davis being there weekend two gets us the Thelma and Louise reference. But it also, because Madonna was also performing with Sabrina Carpenter, gets us a League of Their Own reunion.
You're blowing my mind. I did not think about that at all. And I've seen that movie a million times. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. Did you see the photo of them together backstage, Madonna and Gina Davis?
No.
Super cute. About a foot difference between the two of them.
I'm sure. There was in the original film.
As Madonna said during her 5-minute monologue with Sabrina Carpenter, that Sabrina's the only person she's performed with who's smaller than she is.
Madonna came out and did Vogue. She did a new song from the Confessions 2 album with Sabrina that we've never heard before. And then she did Like a Prayer. And yes, as you mentioned, she spoke about astrology for a long time in the middle of the show, which was wild just because Sabrina's show was so tightly choreographed.
Yes.
It was insane to have Madonna just like freestyling on that mic for that long, but whatever. Bless her.
She can do whatever she wants.
She can do whatever she wants. But it occurred to me when I was watching that, like, Sabrina Carpenter is 26. When she was in diapers, music came out. Like, she missed Madonna's entire career. It's not like she's someone like us or like Lady Gaga that got to see that.
Oh, yeah. I saw a lot of commentary that was like, the crowd is so dead. No one is singing Like a Prayer. It's like, Sabrina Carpenter's audience was born after 9/11. I don't expect them to know the lyrics of Like a Prayer, which came out in 1989.
Yeah, but it is depressing. And it was also depressing in Justin Bieber's set, because when he went out into the crowd, like, a lot of people obviously did know the words to his songs, but like, a lot of people didn't. And a lot of people were just shoving phones in his face, despite the fact that they were on camera being filmed. Like, can you imagine having a moment with Justin Bieber and what everyone sees is you shoving your phone in his face when you could just like put your arms around him and have a moment? It's crazy. People are broken. Like, people are sick.
Well, I'm trying to think, like, how many of those people were just elder millennials that were actually there to see the Strokes, and because of just the crowd crush, couldn't leave for Bieber.
None of them were elder millennials. Not one.
This reminds me that Paul McCartney has long said that he won't take selfies with people because people shove their phones in celebrities' faces. And so when that happens to Paul McCartney and they're like, can I get a photo with you? He goes, no, but I'll sit and have a conversation with you. Which, could you imagine rejecting that? You're like, actually, I'm just in it for the selfie. No thanks, Paul McCartney. But yeah, to your point, I pulled out this screenshot from Madonna and Sabrina Carpenter performing, and it's just, it's a sea of phones. I don't know. Be in the moment. That's my old man yelling at the sky.
Are you feeling like Ray from Girls again?
Always. You know that. Now you're making me wonder how Ray from Girls would feel learning that Madonna's costumes were stolen backstage.
So Madonna wore a costume that she had worn. Was it at Coachella, or was it just a costume that she'd worn like in the original Confessions era?
No, she said that it was the costume. So it's a Gucci jacket and a corset. And the boots. Everything she was wearing on stage with Sabrina is what she wore at her performance of Coachella 20 years earlier. Because people forget that Confessions on a Dance Floor was a return to form for Madonna because the album before An American Life?
American Life.
Just American Life.
Just American Life.
Certainly not This American not this- Life.
Yeah, I see where you're going with that.
But it was a colossal failure, critically, commercially, and people thought she was done for. And then Confession of the Dance Floor came out and everyone was like, we love Madonna again. And yes, she had this very specific silhouette and costume, which she brought out for the Sabrina Carpenter performance. And then someone stole it all backstage.
They should be charged with a hate crime. This is like no different than defacing the Stonewall Monument.
I'm always obsessed with when celebrities give out email addresses because I love the amount of people who just get regular Gmail accounts. Like it's infomaverick2026@gmail.com. This is if you have any information about the stolen costumes. It's not even like infomaverick2026@madonna.com.
It's very upsetting.
I assume that these costumes got stolen when Madonna was doing, speaking of Valerie Cherish, a very Valerie Cherish-esque dance in the crowd. Did you see this video?
Yes.
And little did we know those costumes were being stolen. Does this mean that the Frida era of Gucci is coming back?
I hope not. But I am really happy that Madonna has Confessions 2 coming out. The album cover was released last week, which was amazing, which was shot by Raphael Pavarotti, who's primarily a fashion photographer. But I thought it was so striking and so perfect and like one of the best album covers I've seen in a while.
Yeah, it's a nice nod to the original Confessions on a Dance Floor.
In the color scheme.
Yeah. Mostly.
And also the sort of classic Madonna, like Madonna the Christian Madonna, not Madonna the pop star Madonna, iconography that she's been dipping into for her entire career.
So this album is Confessions 2. It's not Confessions on a Dance Floor 2, which I find interesting.
And the first single, I Feel So Free, I love. I think it's such a great dance song. Like, I haven't been this excited about a new Madonna single in a really long time. I don't even remember the last time, actually.
Probably since Confessions on a Dance Floor.
And it sounds like Confessions, like the production and stuff, but also like erotica because of the way she's talking in the song is reminiscent of the single erotica.
Yeah, the sort of sing-songy tone poem delivery that she did on the erotica album. Yeah, it reminded me of like Fever and Deeper.
Do we know when this is coming out though?
July 3rd, which is feels like a little too deep in the summer.
Yeah, that's a while off.
I need this album now.
Me too.
And perhaps longer if Madonna is going to withhold this album until she gets her costumes back.
I know. I never pre-order albums, like physical copies of albums, but I actually will do this for Confessions 2.
Okay.
It looks amazing. I think I need the CD and the vinyl.
I was going to ask, yeah, what does one purchase these days as physical media?
I barely ever do it. I have to really be into something. Like, I think the last, like, records I've bought was probably the Pearl soundtrack. And then before that, I think it was the picture disc of the WAP single, which thank God I have that. But I'm not really a big, like, buying new vinyl kind of person. I have a bunch of older stuff, but I'm not like someone that's buying like 10 different variants of Taylor Swift's new record.
You only buy the first five.
Not even.
I am so glad to have Warby Parker as a sponsor of this podcast. I started wearing Warby Parker glasses exclusively about a decade ago and have never looked back. Actually, it's time for me to get a new pair. Before Warby Parker, shopping for glasses was a nightmare. There were the unstylish options at my eye doctor's office, or it was spending an entire paycheck for designer glasses at some fancy eyeglass place that was always at a strip mall. Anyway, and then Warby Parker came along. Nothing comes close to them on quality, price, selection, and customer service. Their prescription glasses start at $95, so you can actually get quality and stylish frames at an affordable price. Another struggle for me? Finding glasses that actually fit my face. And one thing I love about Warby Parker is their virtual try-on option. I don't know what technology they're using, but it's the best virtual try-on I've used and lets me know before purchasing what glasses will actually look good on me. They have everything you need for happier eyes. That includes contacts, online eye exams, and sunglasses. glasses. Go online or go in the store, as Warby Parker has over 300 retail stores in the U.S. Warby Parker is covered by major eye insurance plans, and they make it incredibly easy to use. Just enter your information to see if you're eligible for benefits on frames, contacts, or eye exams. If you are, they automatically apply them for you. Right now, buy one prescription pair and get 20% off any additional prescription pairs at warbyparker.com/outfit. That's 20% off additional prescription pairs when you go to warbyparker.com/outfit.
All right. What other pop princesses do we have to talk about?
Olivia Rodrigo has a new single, and she did make a Coachella appearance with Addison Rae. I wouldn't say that either of them were killing it vocally in that performance necessarily, but I loved the energy and I loved the vibes and the looks, and it spoke to me.
I was going to say, I feel like Addison Rae is mostly vibes.
The attitude is so good, the sisterhood. I'm into that.
And I do appreciate Addison Rae making that, what was it, a 4 or 5 p.m. time slot work. Just sun blaring.
But Olivia performed her new single, Drop Dead. A video also came out this week for that, which Petra Collins directed. Shot at the Palace of Versailles.
Which makes sense, since there is a lyric referencing Versailles in this song.
I'm sure it was a huge production, but it doesn't actually look like one, just because it was like shot on the sort of 90s video camera that we would have used for home movies. And also Olivia was the only person in the music video for the majority of it.
Yeah, it was Petra Collins. I saw some Instagram post that figured out all the different stocks and cameras that she used. Because, yeah, it felt very home video, obviously purposely so. But there was something very local news in the 90s about it, which was an interesting tension with being at the Palace of Versailles.
Totally. Usually when we have these kind of crazy locations, we get videos like Jay-Z and Beyonce's Ape Shit. They did the opposite.
Yeah, you know, there's typically coverage, multiple angles.
Nope, but I liked that. And she was wearing a upscale sort of jailbait look by Chloe. Very cute.
I love her, Olivia Rodrigo's music. I feel too old to be a fan of hers, but there is this like simpatico, or like this feeling that if I were a teenager, it's like, oh, that would be my person.
Oh, of course. Because she's borrowed a lot visually from Sofia Coppola and from Courtney Love thus far with this album's rollout.
But it does feel weird to be an almost 40-year-old woman standing for like a young pop star in her 20s. I respect her, but...
Oh, absolutely. I feel like a full-blown freak. But this song, I feel like, is a little disappointing for a lead single. I think it's a good song. But if we're comparing it to Driver's License and Vampire, it's just very different.
That's probably what she's trying to go for.
And it's not that it's outside of her normal sort of style. She has lots of songs like this on her records. But I don't know. I'm excited to hear the album. I think the music video is great. But I don't know if I'm listening to this song on repeat in my car.
No, but I look forward to hear snippets of it in TikTok videos for the next 3 months.
So Rihanna isn't doing anything musically still, but she's still dominating the conversation because she is outpacing every single pop star in terms of fashion. And this W cover is insane.
I mean, shout out to Sarah Moonves doing
a genius
job at W Magazine. This cover just made you go,
why isn't Vogue like this?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, it's funny that last week we were talking about, was it last week that we were discussing the Anna Wintour, Meryl Streep Vogue cover? And you literally were like, why can't Tim Walker shoot this? And lo and behold, Tim Walker is the photographer for the Rihanna W Magazine cover and editorial.
Yeah, you can hire someone that can take really classical photographs, but we just need a different vibe. Tim Walker also did those incredible portraits of Chapel Roan for W last year.
Right.
Which were so good. The image of her and her baby is so glamorous. It's so powerful. And it almost has a punk quality, although I suppose it's more of a New Romantics type of look because she has that sort of makeup and the historical fashion references and stuff like that.
The cover image takes your breath away. And then you read that baby Rocky is in Dior Haute Couture
diaper.
Yeah. And that really takes your breath away.
That's so major. And that's how you know that Rihanna is on a level that no one else is at, really. Like, Dior isn't making diapers for just anyone.
Some might say they're not making diapers at all, unless it's for this specific case.
But also the second cover, which didn't feature her baby, which was just Rihanna in this like gorgeous feathered Chanel Couture look with these like long, sinister talon nails. That was breathtaking also.
It made me want yet another version of 101 Dalmatians, but this time with Rihanna as Cruella de Vil.
Totally. It was very Cruella de Vil. Just amazing. I also just love to see a bad girl killing it. Even in her maternity portrait, she has this attitude about her that is so unique and so cool.
Also, the editorial is just so interesting between the styling and then the fisheye lens, classical portraiture. It's all great. It's been a very long time since a fashion editorial has inspired me, made me feel anything.
Yeah, I think that W is killing it generally. Like, it has outpaced every other American fashion magazine by such a huge margin. It's crazy.
Which is why they are launching an offshoot magazine.
Yes, they are launching a teen magazine called W Youth.
Which, if you read the press release, is to be pronounced Double Youth. Get it?
I get it. But that's just kind of hard because that's not how it's spelled. But whatever. I will adapt. Whether it's W Youth, Double Youth, whatever.
We'll be there to buy its biannual issue.
Yeah. And it's made by the same people that make W, but they've also brought on friend of the show, Ava Nerui, who up until recently has been the creative director of Heaven by Marc Jacobs to do this. So it's going to be cool, but it's really interesting to me that anyone is making a teen magazine right now. No one's really figured it out in recent years.
Well, I love that Sofia Coppola and her other daughter, the one that doesn't have a TikTok, Cosimina, will be contributing editors.
Of course.
I mean, Double Youth, still hard to say. W Youth. This is just reminding me of
Say it however you want. People are going to call it W Youth because that's what the logo says.
We're having a Wonders O'Neaters issue with this because Double Youth just reminds me of, like, remember when the WB was the Dubba Dubba WB?
No.
You remember the frog saying that?
I didn't have cable until I was like 18.
I mean,
like, I didn't have the WB. I only watched Dawson's Creek at my grandparents' house.
That's insanity.
But I'm going to assume that Double Youth is going to be more fashion and culture focused. Because the last magazine or the last teen magazine that was kind of a big deal was Teen Vogue, when it had its sort of rebrand, I guess, a little before the pandemic or something like that.
2017?
Where they were covering more like politics, but also mental health, sexual health, that sort of thing. I can't imagine that Double Youth is going to be like publishing stories about masturbation and about eating disorders in that sassy Teen Vogue rookie kind of mold.
I don't know. I enjoy that, like Teen Vogue, they are halving the size of W Magazine. So it's going to be a littler W Youth.
How could it be thinner than it is? Oh, you mean like the scale of it?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
It's going to be half the size. She's going to be teeny tiny.
Cute.
It's always a good week when we have an episode sponsored by The RealReal, the best place to shop authenticated luxury handbags, clothing, watches, and so much more. I think where we left things in our never-ending RealReal story is that I had sold a few things on The RealReal, but I had yet to purchase anything with my store credit. I have now remedied that. So what did I get? Well, I was quite inspired by the Marked by Sophia documentary, and I got a very Liza Minnelli-inspired 1970s-esque Marc Jacobs mini dress for a steal at $50. $72. I also got a Tom Ford era Gucci black button down that I'm sure Demna will be knocking off next season. I must say, this cycle of selling things on The RealReal and using the proceeds to buy more clothing on The RealReal is quite addicting. The choice is honestly endless. The RealReal has over 10,000 new arrivals every day, and they do their daily drops at 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern. And when you sell with The RealReal, they do everything for you, from photography and copywriting to shipping, pricing, and customer service, so you can just sit back and get paid. The RealReal is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. With over 10,000 new arrivals daily, no one does resale like The RealReal. And now get $25 off your first purchase when you go to therealreal.com/outfit. That's therealreal.com/outfit to get your $25 off. Start shopping now at therealreal.com/outfit.
What else? The Practical Magic 2 trailer. Very excited to talk about this with you.
Okay. Positives. We're getting a Practical Magic 2.
Yes. Other positives. Really fun to see Stockard Channing and Diane Wiest revisit their iconic roles.
Stockard Channing, who looks incredible.
Yeah, she looks younger than she did in Grease.
Other positives. Lee Pace with a British accent.
Are we out of positives? I mean, obviously, Nicole and Sandra. These are our girls.
Okay. The negatives. Why is the film going to look like this? Why does this film look like every streaming series?
I know. I hate that it just like looks cheap just from the trailer. And you know how like Andre Leontali was talking about like the famine of beauty? Like, we are having a famine of beauty when it comes to like lighting and color grading.
So people online love to say, oh, why is the color grading bad? But it starts before the post-production process. This starts with lighting. And this is my theory, because this type of lighting started on, sorry to get into nerdship, but it started with comic book films because they needed like a general flat lighting in case in post-production they were like, you know what, let's add the Hulk into this scene. But somehow that is spilled over into our Ladies of a Certain Age movie and TV series. And I saw the photos of Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock at CinemaCon. Whatever they are doing, I'm sure a lot of it is just incredible genetics, and then whatever they're doing on top of that, they look great. There is a moment in this trailer, Chelsea, and it brings me no pleasure to say this, but it feels like their faces are floating over their heads.
I don't know what you're referring to, but I don't doubt it.
It also doesn't feel like they're on real sets, and I believe they are on real sets, but it feels like the house that we all know and love is actually just green screened, or the volume, whatever it is now.
Totally. And when I think about Practical Magic, we love that movie for two reasons. Because it's about sisterhood, it's about women, the bonds between women, families, that type of shit. And also this location, which was so chic. And not even just the house, the whole world of the show. Sandra Bullock's little store. Like, it's the most aspirational fantasy of how a woman could live in a small town.
Which is my second question about this trailer. What happened to her little apothecary store? It seems like she's a librarian now.
If she doesn't still have that apothecary store, that's insane, because she was like on the ground floor of that Kiehl's shit back in the day.
We learned that she sold it to Sephora.
Maybe she did. Also, we see Joey King and Maisie Williams in this trailer. Are they supposed to be the granddaughters? Because, like, that can't be Sandra Bullock's daughters. They would be our age.
Yeah. I mean, so Sandra Bullock posted on her Instagram stories a few days ago a well-worn red copy of The Book of Magic, which is the fourth book in this series. Because Practical Magic is a book series. And that book follows the three generations of the Owen sisters as they try to break the curse when they learn that Jet, which is the Diane Wiest character, learns that she has 7 days to live. So
surely there's a spell that can take care of that.
Perhaps it involves Sandra Bullock having to have sex with Lee Pace. I'm here for that. But yes, given that Sandra Bullock posted this copy of the book, we can assume that this is the plot of the film. We do see them go to England, it seems, on some kind of Harry Potter train.
That's exactly what it was.
Yes, I believe that Maisie Williams and Joey King are Sandra Bullock's daughters. or people think that they might be the younger versions of Stalker Channing and Diane Wiest in flashbacks, but that's not possible.
No.
We see them on the roof with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman doing the umbrella thing.
And that's the other thing. The whole trailer was callbacks to the original movie. The spoon stirring the tea itself, the lime and the coconut of it all. The reference to, remember that time we buried that guy like under a rose bush?
Goran Vishnik? Yes, I do remember that, you guys. Also, I'm supposed to believe that you didn't accidentally murder another man in the last 25, 30 years? I don't believe it. You've definitely helped one of the women in the small town you've lived in kill a man. For good reason, but I'm just saying there are other men buried in your backyard.
It just makes me kind of sad because I can see the more elevated version of this and imagine what it would look like. They could get Rodarte to do the costumes. Like, it would be major, but no.
Yes. I think I made this point to you off mic, but it does seem, going back to nerd shit, that this idea of fan service and these like callbacks of like, oh my God, it's, you know, the Millennium Falcon, and oh my God, that's the Infinity Stone that Thanos had. Isn't that crazy? Unfortunately, that has made its way into movies we care about.
Gross.
Look, like The Devil Wears Prada 2, I will be sat when this movie comes out.
I will be sat? Aren't you supposed to be seated?
I will be sat. I will be seated.
Again, how fucking old are we?
Very old.
Entering our Stockard Channing era.
Yeah, somehow we fast-forwarded through Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman. We're just immediately Diane Wiest and Stockard Channing. Sorry, this was all to say that I will be in theaters opening day, which is 9/11 is when this film comes out.
What better way to celebrate the 25th anniversary?
The 25th anniversary, also the day that Deborah Vance plays Madison Square Garden.
Oh my God. So the return of practical magic has made me think about other beloved chick flicks. And it seems like all of these chick flicks are now being turned into musicals. So first we have the musical version of Thelma and Louise.
Which I have questions.
The music is by Neco Case. It is premiering in London.
The original screenwriter of Thelma and Louise has come back to write the book. I just want to know, how are we showing the car crash over the mountain at the end?
They'll figure it out. Maybe the car will fly over the audience like it's the Phantom of the Opera or some shit.
Well, that's exciting. Yeah, it seems like as we get into these musicals, we've got a lot of travel ahead of us in the coming months.
Then there is the Girl Interrupted musical, which I am most excited about.
Music by Amy Mann.
Music by Amy Mann. And if you've ever been depressed and you've ever heard a song by Amy Mann, you know that her music sounds like what depression feels like. And it always has.
Well, the fact that this show is debuting at the Public in New York, it is, I wouldn't say one of our favorite books, because as we discussed on the Girl Interrupted VIP episode,
we do prefer the movie.
It's one of the rare cases where the movie adaptation is better than the book. It's different.
Yeah. And it's encouraging that it's at the Public, because while this is off-Broadway, this is the theater where Hamilton came from, where Fun Home came from.
I have to say, it is playing in May and June at the Public. I went this morning to go look at tickets. It is really sold out.
Really?
Yeah, so we got to make some decisions after we record this podcast.
Yeah, I really want to see it. Also, our fave King Princess is playing the Angelina Jolie role.
Oh, that's right.
And the lead is, I forget her name, but she was also in Stereophonic, that Broadway musical that also starred Sarah Pidgeon that people were obsessed with, about a Fleetwood Mac type band. So I'm sure she's major.
See, I feel like Girl Interrupted is easier to adapt as a stage play than, say, Thelma and Louise.
For sure.
A notorious road film.
There's also currently a musical of Beaches that is on Broadway.
I will leave you to see that on your own.
Well, you've never seen the film Beaches, which is really crazy, and we need to change that soon. Like, okay. That can be a 2026 goal.
Okay.
But my friend Paul went to see Beaches, and he said that it was fucked because the whole thing takes place at the beach, which if you've ever seen that movie, that is crazy because it's called Beaches because the beach like bookends the film. Like, it starts at the beach, it ends at the beach. It's not set on the beach.
As someone who has never seen this film, as you previously noted, I even know that.
Also, Beaches was a musical to begin with. It wasn't a musical where people randomly break out into song, but it's about a friendship between two women, and the Bette Midler character is a singer,
right,
and is trying to make it in show business. So you see the rise of her career, and she sings all of these incredible songs, none of which are in the musical apart from Wind Beneath My Wings.
So we're excited for this?
I don't think I'm seeing Beaches. I think I'm doing Girl Interrupted, but I don't know. I would love if Beaches was good. I am deeply just offended by the details of it that I am already aware of.
All right. I think I'll stick to the film for now.
Also, girl, we got to talk about Euphoria.
People seem very upset about this season. And I just have to say that Euphoria, the first season, came out so long ago. And in that time, the amount of anthology, prestige, limited series that have come out, where like the cast just reboots and it's a new setting, has just made me enter into this season of Euphoria, which seems to be a completely different story, not attached to what we had seen the previous two seasons. And I'm fine with it. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I'm choosing to look at the third season of Euphoria like it is an And Just Like That-esque reboot and not the final season of Sex and the City, if that makes any sense.
Right. Well,
because it's such a departure from the original story.
And in defense of Sam Levinson, he is dealing with an issue narratively that literally every show that begins in high school deals with, which is once you don't have the structure of high school, you don't know what to do with these characters. This happened to Buffy, Beverly Hills 90210, Gossip Girl. Like, just think of any show that the characters began in high school. The wheels fall off once they graduate. Now, we didn't see them graduate high school is another issue.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people watch movies like Kids and 13, and they watch television shows like Skins and Euphoria because they are about young kids doing fucked up shit. And that is the whole point of the show. And young people watch it because it's about people their age. And old people watch it because they get a perverse thrill from watching a bunch of horny drug addicts. It hits different when they are adults. The whole point is that they are kids.
Do you remember this Variety article that came out a year or two ago about the problems that Sam Levinson was having with season three? Just like writing season three. Because I'm watching the first two episodes and I forever remember this detail where Sam Levinson's original pitch was that Rue was a private investigator. And so whenever I'm watching this Rue storyline that is essentially seems like the plot of Breaking Bad, it's just like, what if she was in Breaking Bad now?
It's wild that she is now in her own Tarantino movie.
Right.
And no one else is in it. She still sees Jules and like the other people in the cast, but like they are in like some semblance of reality. It may be very different from high school, but it's like they're all in one world. And then Rue is in this other world, like at the strip club in the desert.
Participating in human trafficking, possibly. But this is all to say that like when I'm watching her scenes, I'm like, I would have rather she was a private detective.
I would rather she was just like a drug addict still. Because it seems like Sam Levinson had dealt with addiction himself. He wanted to make a show about addiction, but to me it's more interesting to see this character struggle with that than to sort of expand the world of the show and make it about the industry of selling drugs.
Well, then you really wouldn't have liked Zendaya's pitch for what Rue should be doing this season, which was that she would be sober and she would be a pregnancy surrogate.
I don't like any of these ideas for her.
Well, I mean, I guess smartly HBO was like, no. And we've landed here. Everyone is complaining about how fantastical everyone's lives are and how heightened everything is. Like the idea that Maddie shows up to a meeting in a fur coat and a pristine Mercedes, but we're also supposed to understand that she lives in like squalor in some Hollywood basement apartment. I don't have a problem with any of this.
No, I love that, actually.
However, to me, the most fantastical thing is this world where Rue is seemingly in Hemet, Lancaster, Mexico, and yet is 45 minutes away from Los Angeles. She's constantly just driving in and out. Chelsea, I thought for the first episode that Jules lived in Seoul, Korea. I had no idea that that was an apartment in downtown LA.
No, I know.
I'm like, how did Rue get to Asia? And then I was like, oh shit, is this supposed to be downtown Los Angeles?
No, it's so crazy that it's all still allegedly in the same world. Because also Cassie and what's Jacob Lordy's character?
Nate.
They're off in some crumbling mansion in Beverly Hills somewhere, I guess.
Or Orange County. This was always the thing, is Euphoria, the first two seasons, took place in a fictional town, but I had always assumed it was like somewhere in Central California, maybe Modesto, maybe Santa Cruz, because I think we see the ocean sometimes.
Right.
None of this is close to Los Angeles, where seemingly they all live now.
Yeah, it's weird to have such an ambiguous setting for the first two seasons and then triple down on LA in the last season.
I think the worst part of Euphoria is I have enjoyed Sam Levinson's work. I think he has always been provocative, whether you like it or not. The most embarrassing thing to me this season is like, hey, you know this thing called OnlyFans? What if I did that? It's like in the year of our Lord 2026.
Okay, but I do like the fact that Sydney Sweeney is on OnlyFans. And I like the fact that Alexa Demi is managing these kinds of girls.
All of this makes sense. Jules being a sugar baby and an art school dropout, and she's sleeping with these guys so that she can fund her art career. That's realistic.
And her crazy ass apartment.
And her 50-inch sew-ins. Her hair is crazy. I watched some behind-the-scenes thing with the hairstylist of Euphoria where it's like, yeah, Hunter Schafer came in and was like, I would like hair down to my ass this season.
The hair, makeup, the costumes by Natasha Newman-Thomas. Incredible.
Yeah, I think people who are like, this is so unrealistic. It's like, did you watch the first two seasons of Euphoria?
I know. But also, they've made a choice to pivot to this Valley of the Dolls type shit, which I appreciate.
Well, there's also a level of fuck it to this season that you can really see in the fact that Jacob Elordi is like, yeah, I'm a contractor and a developer, but also I exclusively wear Bottega Veneta.
Well, he has that Bottega contract.
No, he does, of course. That's Jacob Elordi being like, and I will be wearing Bottega, but it makes no sense for the character.
I think it makes sense for the character. I like that it's all heightened. It's Patricia Field logic.
Of course. But it's very clear what Sam Levinson is not interested in. He's not interested in them being in high school anymore, which is fair. He has chosen to fast forward basically the 5 years it took to get this series on air. He has to address the pandemic in his own way, but doesn't want to delve in there. At that point, if you remember how many times they had to restart the third season before it went into production, and how old, I mean, complimentary, but like these actors are all in their late 20s, if not early 30s. Just do Romeo and Michelle. Just make it their fucking 10-year high school reunion.
I don't know, but they're not so old that they couldn't play college students. And, you know, I get it. It's fucked up when people go to college when it's like a Dawson's Creek situation. But also, like, we have college movies like Rules of Attraction that are more aligned with Euphoria. They could have done something fucked up and edgy in that vein.
Oh, yeah. Seemingly none of these characters went to college either.
I think I'm most excited about Alexa Demi. Her character, her looks, the whole thing.
I mean, I love Beverly Hills 90210, and I see a little bit of that DNA in the fact that, like, Maude Apatow is in love with the late night actor who Alexa Demi is, like, the handler of. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, that overlap makes sense. But yeah, I mean, the other interesting thing are all of these reports where it's like, Jacob Elordi has a limited role. Oh, so does Sydney Sweeney. It's like, what are the rest of the episodes going to be then? It's like Hunter Schafer was only available for a limited time.
I have no idea what to expect from this season.
It's also, Rue is a very difficult character to have a satisfying conclusion for.
Yeah, for sure.
She's either going to die or get sober or stay high. I mean, she is the Sam Levinson avatar character, meaning like that is who he sees himself as. And he is someone who struggled with addiction, who got sober. So who knows? Maybe the series finale is a meta thing where she has created Euphoria. But I guess Mod Apatow did that in the...
Yeah, they already did that.
Yeah, whatever. I choose to see this as a positive. I have no idea where the season is going. I think next week's episode is the Nate and Cassie wedding episode.
Thank God.
Where everyone is dressed insanely.
Everyone's turning looks, and I'm into it.
All right, what else? I think we've got some fashion news to round out the episode.
Starting with La Roche's Delta tweet. Wait, it was Delta, right?
Oh, yes. Guys, you didn't think we were going to talk about this La Roche tweet? So on Monday, La Roche tweeted, "Dear at Delta, I'm Delta 360 and a million miler. This morning I paid for a Delta 1 seat from NYC to LA, and when I got on the plane, it was not a lie-flat seat. I was very disappointed." This, of course, elicited a lot of Kim, there are people that are dying memes in reaction to this, but come on. That is an expensive ticket. It is a cross-country flight. Don't act like all of you would not be pissed off if it wasn't a lie-flat seat as well.
Look, I think he has a right to be annoyed about it, but like, I don't think he should have tweeted this, not because it's like a privileged thing to tweet, but because it's an embarrassing thing to tweet.
So this is my question. He references being a Delta 360 member, which I had to look up, and it's an exclusive invite-only loyalty program for Delta Airlines' highest-value customers positioned above Diamond Medallion status. So presumably one of the perks is a dedicated support line. Why is he tweeting this?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, why isn't he calling, like, the Delta 360 concierge? Like, that's the ultimate perk of being in one of those programs.
So the next day, he quote tweeted himself and said, "Just got the sweetest message from at Delta. Thank you for your continued amazing customer service. This is why I stay so loyal. Now, while I have you, can we talk about me redesigning the flight attendant uniforms?" And then I was like, oh, is this just all a viral marketing campaign to soft launch him redoing Delta's flight attendant uniforms?
Not the worst idea.
Do you think other celebrities saw this and they were like, wait, what's Delta 360? And why don't I have it?
This week, we also got a preview of Victoria Beckham's first Gap collection. It's going to be an ongoing collaboration with Gap.
Yes, according to the press release, it's a multi-season partnership that will be launching with this spring 2026 collection, which has 38 pieces, which you wouldn't know because it is so difficult to see this entire collection anywhere. It's like the same three press images and then these like teeny tiny Polaroids.
Why is it always like this? No one makes it easy to look at the entire collection ever. So it's like, I don't even know how to judge it, really.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some looks that I have seen that I am into. Like, there's a vaguely Western denim shirt and a couple of pants. I'm like, I definitely want to get those. But some of it is giving G label, I have to say.
Yeah. Look, they're trying to elevate the Gap source material. They're not trying to bring the runway to the Gap, which I do think is the correct strategy. I think Uniqlo has been very successful in doing that. And I feel like the denim jacket, the straight leg jeans, that kind of stuff looks good. But the hoodies that say Gap Victoria Beckham, I'd rather die. And I like a Gap hoodie.
Yeah, there's also, I think I saw like a navy t-shirt-esque dress where I'm like, Gwyneth Paltrow was selling that on Julian's auction. I've seen this piece before.
No, you're right. A lot of it is Gwyneth adjacent, especially in the closures on some of the pants and the skirts. It's almost like a slight like wrap front. That's not the correct.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, according to the press release, the capsule collection reworks the brand's core staples, the brand being Gap, with sharper tailoring and subtle design signatures. The campaign draws from late 80s and 90s references through the photography and styling. And the retail pricing ranges from $34 to
$328. $328 seems like a lot. That better be like a leather pencil skirt or something.
I agree with you because this collaboration intrigues me because I would like to buy some Victoria Beckham at a Gap price point. Again, I've only seen what seems to be 8 of these 38 pieces. However, Chelsea, I went to Gap's website, and if you sign up for the Encore Gap credit card, you can shop this collection one day early. And if that isn't some evil late-stage capitalism shit...
They've been trying to get me to sign up for that Gap credit card since the 90s. Maybe it's time. Maybe I fucked up, honestly.
So anyway, this collection launches Friday, April 24th at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and in some select stores at 10 a.m. local time. Chelsea, have you noticed that Victoria Beckham has been making the press rounds to promote this collab? And of course, all anyone wants to ask her is about the rift between her son and Nicola Peltz Beckham.
What has she been saying?
I mean, she, like David Beckham, she just has very classy answers and ways to actually evade and not answer the question. I just love how everyone doesn't want to talk about this Gap collection and just wants a soundbite.
Of course, because I don't know how much there is to say about this Gap collection.
There's certainly not a lot to see. And this capsule will drop the day this episode is releasing.
Perhaps we'll have more to say about Susie Cave's new label, Weddings and Funerals. Or is it Susie Cave Weddings and Funerals?
I took it to be Susie Cave Weddings and Funerals. Although this equally, when I was looking into it, I guess she has created 25 made-to-order pieces, but only 3 or 4 images have been released.
Yeah, I guess we have even less to talk about with this one. But the 3 or 4 images that have been released look incredible.
Yes. For those who don't know, Susie Cave, the wife of Nick Cave, had a fashion label called The Vampire's Wife, which shuttered in 2024.
She was a model before that and still is a model. She is now the face of Tom Ford. She's in the new ad campaign. She was in not this past fashion show, but the one before that.
And now she has come back with a demi couture line, which the phrase demi couture gives me pause because I'm like, oh, so there's no way I'm going to be able to afford this.
No, absolutely not. And I think you have to physically go there.
Yes, if you go to the website, they don't even have a lookbook. They don't even have the press images that have been shown in these articles. All you can do is sign up for an appointment.
Well, I kind of like that she's doing something old school. We'll see what this turns into. We'll have to have more information about this at some point. But I did really love, it looks like white velvet cape with marabou trim that is very like on the Dr. Zhivago spectrum. Would be perfect for a winter wedding.
I know, it makes me want to get remarried. So I guess this collection has only been shown to her friend Bella Freud, Florence Welch, and I guess Vogue was the lucky third person to view the collection. And as I said, there are 25 made-to-order pieces, which can be customized with capes, trains, veils, and embellishments. Perhaps you and I can go halvesies on a cape or a veil, perhaps.
I don't think this is something that we need to buy into, but it looks fabulous.
Glad it exists.
Totally. Also, speaking of things on the Bella Freud spectrum, we got a trailer for Moss and Freud. I had no idea that this movie was even coming out.
I know. I guess it debuted at the London Film Festival last fall, and we're finally, it's getting a release in about a month, right?
I don't know. I'm just so shocked that this even exists. But apparently, someone made a movie about Kate Moss and Lucian Freud and this period of time where he painted this portrait of her that took 9 months of like these very intense sessions where she would go and sit for him 3 nights a week from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. while she was pregnant also.
Yes, when I was looking at the IMDb, I was tickled to see that there is an actor playing Jefferson Hack, who is her baby daddy.
Of course. There's a Bella Freud in the trailer.
Right. In a world where there are so many biopics for our parents and their interests, it's just delightful to see a biopic about shit we care about that is incredibly, some might say, esoteric.
Totally. And it's also not like they're trying to make a movie about Lucian Freud or Kate Moss's entire career. I like that it's contained to this specific time period. In the trailer, we see recreations of a Vivian Westwood fashion show, what I think is an Alexander McQueen fashion show. The girl that is playing Kate, I've never seen her in anything. She's an actress named Ellie Bamber. She does look like her.
She does. And in the trailer, before I looked up who the actress was, I thought she was one of Mick Jagger and Jerry Hall's daughters.
She looks like she could be from that bloodline. But she has that beautiful, like, heart-shaped face that Kate Moss has and the sort of wide-set eyes.
And when I was researching this movie, Kate Moss is a producer of this film and was heavily involved with the writer-director James Lucas in making sure that this was an accurate portrayal of her and Lucien and their time together. So that's lovely to hear.
I'm sure that she mostly just wanted that input to make sure that they didn't costume her in a fucked up way. And it looks pretty legit.
Yeah, it's just amazing that we're getting a biopic about that time that in Dazed and Confused, Kate Moss was like, I'd love to be painted by Lucien Freud. And then Bella Freud was like, I can make this happen. And then they did this painting called Naked Portrait, which sold for $5 million in 2003 to an anonymous buyer. And the tattoo that Kate Moss has on her back was drawn by Lucien Freud. I'm sure we're going to get all of these moments.
Yeah. Well, and it was also noteworthy, not just because it was like this hugely famous artist painting a celebrity, which he pretty much never did, with the exception of like Lee Bowery, although I don't even know if that's someone I would quantify as a celebrity in a traditional sense, but the way that he painted her and her body was just so the opposite of how we all see Kate Moss, because she looked very voluptuous and womanly.
It's funny, when I was looking this up, it's very difficult to find a photo of the painting. Like, the best photo you can find of it is just someone's head in front of Kate Moss's lower half of her body. But I think it's also what distinguishes this portrait is not that it's an unfavorable view of Kate Moss, but like, for someone that is used to being in front of the lens of a photographer looking her best, it's very, yeah, vulnerable, maybe not the most attractive. Her body's in this prone position, and then she's also pregnant.
Well, he didn't exactly make people look hot, generally. You know, this isn't just specific to Kate Moss. This is his painting style, which wasn't really about cleaving to sort of conventional beauty standards.
An exciting time for us. A lot of culture that feels like it is exactly for the two of us.
How lucky are we?
And I think that does it for this week.
That does it for this week. But next week, we are doing a hotline episode. So if you guys want to call in,
please call us at 323-486-6773 for international fuckettes. We will be doing a Ask Us Anything at some point on Instagram stories next week. So feel free to drop in your questions there.
And that's all, folks.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.